My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Tom, a Pod Hanks Tomcast. This is mini-sode number 8. We're talking uncommon type.
We've reached the end.
This is it. This is the finale. This is the last 3 stories.
This is the one you've all been waiting for.
I'm sure you're all so excited.
So we've got... Oh, what
were sorry, you I was going to say that I'm Daniel.
Oh, I'm Josie.
Welcome back. Just so you know who's talking to you.
Right.
What are we reading today, Josie?
We got 3 stories on the books. Go See Costas, another Hank Fassay, Our Town Today with Hank Fassay, semicolon, Your Evangelista Esperanza, and then the big finisher, Steve Wong is perfect.
He's perfect.
Is it Steve or Steven?
Steve.
Oh, thank God.
So last week I was telling you about my woes with Audible tricked me, and I started reading Go See Costas before Stay With Us, and I found out why, and that the audiobook, if you're going to dive through this in the audiobook, which Tom Hanks reads to you, so I do recommend it, the Stay With Us is actually the last audiobook portion, because he gets a cast of people to play all the parts, and he reads all of the narration.
That sounds good.
It's pretty sweet. It's pretty cool.
That would have made it a lot easier for me to understand.
Yeah, having his sweet words lead you through the scene.
It just becomes like a little... like actual theater performance.
Yeah.
Theater.
Yeah, the man loves theater. Well, let me turn my book over to page 245 to our first story.
Go See Costas. What do you think?
You want to set this one up?
Sure. This story is a tale of immigration. It takes place during the Red Scare. Is that what communism is?
I think so.
I don't know. And there's a nice... I think he's Russian? I don't know. This guy's trying to go to America. He gets a stowaway in a boat. There's a few different characters. There's this friend who's helping him. And then there's the chief of the boat who's not the captain.
So Hassan is our main character. Mm-hmm. He's on his way to America. Along the way through... We're not always 100% sure how he is... obtained this trip, but he's helping a stowaway get there also. And then it's sort of about him in New York City trying to live out this idea of the American dream, but having no real sense of what he's supposed to do to accomplish it.
Yeah, he doesn't speak the language. Mm-hmm. He has people helping him, but he can't... I don't know that he's... He definitely doesn't know the boat chief is helping him.
Yeah, there's a weird... He knows people will help, but he doesn't know who they are, almost, because he's really left to his own devices, especially once he gets to the city. The boat ride seems to go pretty fine. They take a stop in Philadelphia, where he helps the stowaway escape the boat and leaves on, and we don't hear about him. But the stowaway is trying to go to Chicago. He has dreams of Chicago. And then Hassan continues on to New York City.
And so Hassan kind of has to acclimate... He sleeps on the streets. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a home. He barely has any money. He's got a little bit that was given to him.
Yes, by someone on the ship.
Yeah. I think it was the chief.
Might have, yeah.
With a clean set of clothes. This is the only character I know as the chief.
It's cool, though, because the way that he's presented as he's doing all these things in New York, like sleeping, like it does not... He doesn't describe it as being like these bad things. He describes it as like these things he seems like used to and... is sort of thrilled by the prospects of what he's uncovering.
Yeah, this is just what America is.
Yeah, there's an interesting optimism to the story where I think we would read these things he's doing as, like, sad or degrading, and he's very much like, this is what has to happen so I can, like, make this happen. There's all this opportunity for me that I'm going to unlock. Mm-hmm. And he meets a few people there, one of which is a gentleman who feeds him and offers to help him get a job and this whole shebang. And that, you know, there's an adventure of trying to get a job that doesn't go too well.
He's part of the like Greek embassy or some
yeah.
Kind of. So there's... that's they've got resources. They've got clean clothes. They can teach him English, and they're not really requiring any money.
Yeah, I don't quite know. It seems to just be genuine people who are trying to help people who have come to the country.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, he starts to like he has his first hot dog that he loves, and
I love that scene.
Yeah, hot dog sounds really good, actually.
It was just it's like the best thing he ever ate. And it's this. He kind of writes out. Tom writes out this transaction that happens where Asan has money. He has a dollar bill. He doesn't know how much a hot dog costs, but he just hands the guy a dollar, and the guy gives him back the money, and he describes the money like the yeah. thin coin. And this entire story to me focused, the biggest thing I picked up on was this like empathy that you see other people feeling for Asan that you're also forced to feel for Asan yourself as you're reading. He's a likable character. He's earnest. He's hardworking, and he doesn't seem to like have any obvious like bad things that we'd be like, oh fuck this guy, I don't want to root for him.
And it's also sort of a testament, I think, to what Tom Hanks is trying to say about New York as a city and mm-hmm. America at this stage, where it's this very seems to be like a welcoming place, that there's a lot of different cultural differences in the different chunks of New York that they describe, but people there are like most like no one. I mean, he does get pickpocketed while he sleeps, but like people. When he becomes ill, people help him on the street. The hot dog vendor doesn't seem to take advantage of him. He helps him get what he needs, gives him back the correct change. It's sort of just a lot of people helping each other that is a very nice, it's a very like comforting feeling.
Yeah.
This uncertainty of being in a foreign land, and especially a foreign place where you've given up everything to be there and is now going to be your home.
Right, which we do learn a lot about Asan in the later portion.
Yeah.
He had a brother who was killed, and so his journey to getting to America is much harder than I would realize it would be. Obviously, I was born here, and I've never faced any, I've, led a pretty comfortable life. So I can't say that any of these experiences are some that I can understand. Other than by reading them.
It's kind of a focus, and I feel like a lot of what we're taught in school about immigration is stuff about, like, Ellis Island, where people came over, and it's less about what people had to go through. Like, you know, they'll say, oh, the ship's conditions were uncomfortable, say, or they were packed. And we've, you know, obviously heard about slaves coming to America and the horrendous conditions of that. But it's interesting to get a perspective of sort of this person who's, like, paid his way to come here and just has to kind of figure things out. Like, he's come from, like, a bad past of things have happened to him, and he wants this new life and these new experiences, and we're just in his head because he's this optimist about it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows how someone could stay so optimistic.
Yes.
So his brothers died in his journey to America. He found a woman that he was in love with, had a child with. She died during childbirth, and then his kid died. It's, like, nonstop, but this guy somehow manages...
Yeah, this, like, the, he's living the ideal of, like, this want for a fresh start.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole story is basically just kind of his adventures and misadventures of this. And it sort of all comes to a climax that he's trying to get a job at this diner place with a Greek man who owns it.
Kostas. Rob Kostas, maybe?
Yes. And he has a restaurant, but when Asan comes in, he's very much like, oh, so-and-so sent me. You said you'd have a job. And Kostas is like very offended by that idea, that he just has a job waiting for him, as if he'll hire anyone based on that credential, that he doesn't owe anyone anything. And so he sends him away. And there's all these sort of little adventures with Asan and Kostas, and just how they get to meet each other, because Asan returns to just have some coffee the next time because he's been told to go back. But then he returns again. Now he's dressed up and he's cleaned himself up and just returning as like a person just to talk. It sort of becomes his method to like earn the respect of him, to show like this commitment level, because he's traveling pretty far to be there. And this idea that he's coming here because he wants it. He needs the job, yes, but also like is willing to make the job work for him. He's not just going to be someone who's, I don't know, this dispensable person who wants to make himself known.
Which seems to be the big reason that he couldn't get a job from Kostas to start with.
Yeah.
Kostas, like you said, he's fought tooth and nail to get this restaurant open. He went against everybody. You learn a little bit about him, and that's nothing gets handed to anybody. That's how Costas feels. So when he sees how hard Asan is willing to work to get a job as a dishwasher, not even, I can't imagine it's an incredibly well-paying job. So he sees how dedicated he is. It's a sweet little story.
Yeah.
It made me kind of sad.
Yeah, it's interesting to read something that's so, the character we're with is so optimistic, but I feel like what we're witnessing makes me pessimistic.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just saying something about me.
No, I agree. I felt the same way. It kept reminding me, and maybe I've told this story on the show before, one of the jobs I had as a PA a long time ago, not really, it was like 4 years ago, I worked on a show in Panama. And I'd never been to Panama. They gave me like a day's notice before I had to fly out there. And I don't speak a lick of Spanish. I took French in high school. And it was so difficult for me to communicate with anybody there. And it was like I just, at the age of 22, I'd been like, I finally understood what it must be like for people to come to America if it's not their original birthplace and see how hard it is to acclimate. How every single day you have to make an effort to go out, try to communicate. It was so hard. And I was there with people who spoke the language fluently, who could help me. I can't even imagine how hard.
Yeah. Well, and there's this sort of the stereotype of Americans that I think is pretty true, that we don't really learn other languages. We'll go to places. Yeah. And so I think this, what Asan is going for is like, is difficult and also like a respect for what he wants. Like he's going to learn, you know, his ambitions to learn English, mm-hmm. but he still wants people that comfort him, that remind him of home, because he's still trying to figure himself out. And the story sort of wraps up with Costas finally, after kind of, in this, I think, sort of joking, belittling him about coffee, I believe is the thing, and saying like, well, go take off your jacket, and Nico's going to show you how to scrub the pots. Like, it's his first sort of success. He's had little successes that haven't amounted to much, but this is the first time, like, we're seeing him finally take a step toward something that will affect him positively and lead him toward the life it's his first step on his journey into the life he wants.
You're left with this sense of hope that things are going to be okay.
Finally, yes, because I was worried.
Yeah, I was like, this is not going to end well. He's going to lose all his money. He's scared of the cops the whole time.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was sweet.
It was a nice little story.
Oh, I found the typewriter for Gopsy Costas. When he first walks into that Greek embassy or whatever that place was, there's a woman there taking typing lessons on a typewriter, and it's neat. Asan, since he just hears the sound, so there's like I space SSS, like.
And in the audiobook, Tom Hanks reads every one of those I SSSSS.
Could he be more pure? He's just a wholesome, lovable guy. All right.
Next up.
Ugh, I'm already groaning.
The final, Our Town Today with Hank Fosse.
Could not come fast enough. I'm really just, like, dreading these. This one felt a little different, though.
Yeah, I think the last two Hank Fosse's have had a little bit more of an oomph than the first two.
Yeah.
Or more. You want to set this one up as well, then?
Sure. This one's Our Town Today with Hank Fosse, and it's called Your Evangelista Esperanza. It's kind of an interview. It would be like a profile in the newspaper about someone named Esperanza, who Esperanza writes on typewriters. She's chosen to remove cell phones, Facebook, social media, all that stuff, in favor of living a less cluttered life. A
simplified life. And he says that she hangs out in caffeine parlors.
I know,
I like that word.
I underlined that too. I thought it was an interesting. At first I was like, is that a thing?
That's sort of her thing, is that people come to her to type things up for him, whether it's something they've typed and printed on a computer that they want retyped because it gives that handmade, authentic feel of a typewriter, or it's a resume or anything of that nature. She's become this kind of this hobbyist typewriter woman who's now being approached for like little pieces of work or coffee. A lot of times she just wants coffee. Decaf after four, I think she says.
Soy drip.
Yeah.
I will say that I like this story a little bit. I mean, there was no real message, right? It's just
sort of
an interview.
Yeah, I think it's an interview, but it's, I don't know, it's kind of a message into like this person who really loves something that takes it to heart and then gets to utilize that to like make a little money, but also like make a connection with people. I think it's talking about I sort of took it as like she stripped away these devices that we take for granted in communication and found a new way to communicate with people by being this, just offering a really specific service that then, you know, you have to talk to the person that's going to do it to get what you want. And it kind of presents something interesting. Enough to get a newspaper article written about her.
Definitely. So. It is also one of the more modern takes on, like, the actual usage of the typewriter.
Yeah.
Besides that origin story of the woman with the, these are the musings of my heart.
Yeah.
And then, but mostly the typewriter is like a forgotten element in the garage or a, you know, it's, no one's, like, functioning with a typewriter.
Yeah, in public, in, too.
Yeah, and in this modern, like, present day, rather than, like, back in the 20s when I was an actress.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just kind of a nice, sweet, brief story.
I did like the setting of, setting the scene of this, like, coffee parlors.
Yeah.
Different ways of.
I wouldn't mind reading another thing about Esperanza in a different format.
Yeah, like, cool. What's she do?
I'd be curious. I'd like to hear her story.
I'll flesh her out a little. All right.
Well, the typewriter in this one's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
She just
writes on typewriters.
And for our final book in the Uncommon Type Book Club, Steve Wong is perfect.
All right. So we've got our quad. M-dash, Steve Wong, Anna from, like, the Three Exhausting Weeks, that very first mm-hmm. story, and then the guy in that story, which I can't remember his name.
Is he? I forget his name. I just think it's Tom.
Oh, this is just Tom's stories.
Yeah.
It might just be that we never know his name. I'm sure we know it.
Someone will correct us if we're wrong. But
yeah.
Yeah.
No time for that.
But this is focusing on another person in their group, Steve Wong.
Yeah.
Who's a dang good bowler.
Turns out he can bowl strike after strike after strike.
Did you ever bowl growing up?
Yeah, I mean, for, like, birthday parties and stuff.
We had a weird thing where, like, Tuesdays or something after school, I would get taken on a bus to the bowling alley, and you'd, like, bowl for an hour or
You just
two.
Get taken on a bus?
It was, like, an after-school activity when my mom worked.
Oh, cool.
To, like, blow some time. But I, like, bowled with my friends. Some of my friends had, like, their own ball and, like, gloves, and I was just like, this is cool.
Were you good?
I don't remember being good.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna doubt it. I feel like I want to brag to people if I want.
I just had, like, a flashback. In elementary school, we had one of our, like, lessons in PE was a bowling portion.
Yeah.
And I remember we learned how to, like, take the perfect stance to roll a perfect ball. But then you're also in the perfect position to genuflect and, like, do the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. So I'd finish a bowl. I went to, like, a super Catholic private school.
This is making me cringe.
Yeah. Oh, because it's super cool, you mean?
Yeah, it's just like, so cool.
See how cool.
And I'm blown away.
So literally every ball I would roll out, then I'd also just, like, bless myself.
Pray.
Bless up.
Bless up.
You found the typewriter in Steve Wong is Perfect. Did you find it?
So the typewriter is in Steve Wong's house. It says his bowling ball bag, that lovely yellow and brown leather, was behind an old beat-up plaid typewriter case on the highest shelf in what had been his father's sister's closet. I think that. Does that count?
Yes.
Okay.
That means that Steve Wong has done the unspeakable, which is put a typewriter in its case and never use it.
So the guy from Memories of the Heart.
Yes.
Is that what that one's called?
I know. It's the Meditations of
the Meditations of the Heart. He would be mad.
He would be mad.
Yeah, the basic story of this is Steve Wong is a dang good bowler, and he likes to bowl for fun. But he starts to go to this local bowling alley and just, like, destroy. He's doing strike after strike, turkey after turkey, perfect game after perfect game. And he gets so good and builds an audience and people coming to, like, watch this legendary person bowling these perfect games that, like, ESPN or something contacts him.
Like a contest or...
Yeah, where he can win, like, $100,000. Some people don't believe him. They're like, he's a liar.
Yeah.
Prove it.
So if he can bowl a perfect game, 300 points, on TV, he'll win $100,000.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
More money than I have.
For bowling?
For bowling?
That's pretty sweet.
You know, Tom wrote this wonderful little portion that I want to read out loud that kind of sums up. It's not like Steve's been this great bowler this entire time that everyone's known him. He's always just
secretive.
Yeah. Well, and I don't fun. Even, I think I was under the impression that this just happened.
It very well could have been. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So
I don't remember anything else.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So he's rolled one perfect game, and they decide to play a second one. So they're already like, wow, this is like freak accident. He bowled a perfect 300. They do it again, and Tom writes, "A flash flood begins with a drop of rain on stone. A forest fire tells with just a whiff of distant smoke. A perfect game of bowling is a possibility only when an X is recorded in the little box in the corner of frame number one, the first of 12 in a row." So it's like these things happen suddenly, and then it's like they can only happen in a sequential order.
Yeah.
Fire can't start without smoke. Perfect score in a bowling game can't happen
start without an X.
Without a strike. So I like that little phrasing.
There's a few moments. To wrap up the basic story is he agrees to go on this ESPN competition, and then on live TV rolls the perfect game and becomes this, you know, sort of bowling type of hero. But in the process for that, when he finishes the game, he takes off his shoes and leaves his bowling ball and his gloves. Like, he's done. Because one of the things he's really adamant about throughout the story is that bowling should be fun, and this thing we're doing takes that away.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just a thing where you do it and the score doesn't matter. It's become this thing where people have expectations and it just strips away all of the joy from it. And I think that sort of seems to be like the worry of anything you love becoming your job, because then you have an expectation and it takes away like the joy that comes with it.
Yeah, the obligation. It's like, if for whatever reason you or I were like, oh, we can't do the podcast today.
Yeah.
But we feel like we have an obligation. No, I don't know. That's a bad example. I worry about it with my baking sometimes. Everyone's always like, you should open up a... Everyone.
Oh, yeah.
People say you should open up... Why don't you open up a bakery if you love baking so much? Because I don't want that to be my main source of income.
Yeah, it adds some stress onto it. I say that as like the thing I love the most I'm trying to get paid for. So maybe I'm just setting up like a disaster course for myself.
Well, but there's also a way to... Like, I do enjoy my job.
Well,
I love... what I do.
And I kind of thought this almost seems like you could put this, what Steve Wong is feeling, into acting. And I wonder if Tom wrote this as sort of this idea. Like, I feel like he's pretty specific with the movies he takes. I'm assuming he gets approached for a lot of stuff, but he chooses, especially at this stage in his career, specific things he wants to do.
Yeah.
The challenge, I don't know if it's challenging or just the content is something that he gets behind. And that sort of seems like his way to avoid feeling like this, where it is this job. Instead, he gets to walk the line of, I still get to love this, and also, it's my job.
Yeah, plays characters he cares about.
Yeah.
He doesn't just take whatever he's offered. That's a dream.
Yeah, and it sort of all culminates back that, so Steve Wong quits, and months go by, and things kind of return back to normal, and they all decide to go bowling again. And his friends have to talk him into doing it, because he doesn't bring a ball. He's like, I don't want to do this, blah, blah, blah. But then they go together, and when they get to the bowling alley, people are watching them bowl and stuff, because they want to... He's a sort of legend now.
Mm-hmm.
But to him and his friends, just back to normal. It's just him bowling. Like,
just fun.
And it's like, tonight I'm going to win, you're all going to die, stuff like that. Like, it finally returns to normal, and it feels right in the universe.
I like that you just compared it to maybe this being how Tom feels about acting. I think that's an interesting way to look at it.
I hope it is. I hope that there's still joy in it.
Yeah.
I think the joy shows on screen.
Oh yeah.
And like projects like The Post, which
like a love like you, letter to.
Yeah, and you have to be like love working with Spielberg, but also like the message you're representing, like in the character you're playing, like you have to have some type of mind for what you're stating.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. And now hopefully a love of novel writing, because we freaking done, man.
We done. I think that story was a good and it was a perfect way to end the book.
Yeah, I was really, really, I was really happy to come back to them.
Yeah.
And I like that it's less about, the focus is not on the other people we've known from that friend group.
Yeah, we learn about them all. It was sweet. So I was reading the acknowledgments portion of the book. I found it interesting that one of the people that Tom thanks is Steve Martin, who I don't know if it's actually Steve Martin, but I would assume so.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that we're not in here. Well, I guess I shouldn't read it. We didn't start the podcast when this book was published. But
right,
I
we'll
can
cut him
add.
Some slack. Maybe the next
one.
I also read something that, well, he dedicated the book to his wife and his kids, which is so sweet. Literally is the cutest thing ever. I cannot think of anything cuter. Nora Ephron, who was a friend of his, but they did movies together, and she helped him write this. Like, she was the inspiration to, like, she read his first words.
Oh, that's really cool.
Which is awesome. He is a well-connected man, and he's using his resources
to do really interesting things.
Right.
Oh, I just turned the book on its back, and Steve Martin has a quote on the back, so that makes a little more sense.
What is the quote?
It turns out that Tom Hanks is also a wise and hilarious writer with an endlessly surprising mind. Damn it.
I love Steve Martin. Their whole friendship is just this, like, they reluctantly hate, like each other, even though they're jealous of it. It's so funny.
So, we've completed it. Do you have some standouts that really spoke to you in terms of, like, the different stories?
I do. I really liked the opener.
Yeah.
I think it was smart to... I'm, like, turning the pages. Yeah. It was really nice to start with these characters who I didn't ever know that I was going to end up getting to learn more about. I love the character of Anna. I identify with her very strongly. And I think that's probably why that one stood out to me.
It's nice to kind of have them as a follow-through throughout the book. Mm-hmm. We get to spend a little bit of time with them at different moments to kind of remind us that though these are short stories and all different varieties of content, like, we're still sort of grounded in this, in these characters that kind of move us through.
Right. I loved A Month on Green Street. I feel like that could be a freaking movie that I would watch.
Yeah.
Like a longer love story. These Are the Meditations of My Heart. That was the one where she found the typewriter, and I just love that. Past Is Important to Us. That was a good one. And then this ending one, Steve, one is perfect. I never thought I would be so interested in bowling.
Yeah. I've bowled enough, but I've never looked at bowling so artfully where I'm like, yeah, there it is.
There's like suspense and action. What about you?
I think I'm pretty much in the same realm as you. I also really liked Christmas Eve 1953.
Oh, yeah. That was cute.
And A Special Weekend was maybe one of my favorites. Yeah, just because that there's so much going on there. And I think the biggest surprise with those was the Gosi Kostas was a surprise for me because nothing else in the book had really prepped me for that type of story.
I agree.
Like, everything had it kind of a grounded in, like, a specific realm that I was then kind of getting used to in terms of his themes, and that was sort of a surprise one that I thought was really interesting.
Totally different type of character than we never seen from him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, a very impressive work.
I am impressed. Color me impressed.
Yeah. I mean, each short story... I never read a collection of short stories before, honestly. I like the little portions. So you can read one.
Bite size.
You get satisfied with it.
Yeah, it's strange because we've read it over a few months. And I usually... I think you do the same. Like, I burned through a book in a few days.
Right.
So it's strange to stop myself. Because I was like, if I read it now, I'm going to have to go back and read it again before just to remind... so it's interesting to read it. And I guess it is nice because since it's short stories, it doesn't feel like a broken experience. It just feels like...
Yeah, just little stories.
But
I would recommend this one to anyone who is a fan of literature, a fan of Tom, and a fan of typewriters.
Was that the end of it?
Sorry. I think so. Yeah, it's a strong collection of fiction.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's a great... it's interesting because I don't quite know the audience I'd recommend it to because it sort of just encompasses a lot of different... types of writing and genres, but that's sort of the perfect thing is if you're not liking one, you can skip it and not lose anything from it if you were that kind of person.
Yeah, which I kind of was with Hank Fassay, my arch nemesis.
But even those are like 4 pages.
Yeah, it's a waste to skip them.
It is one I think it's a great read, but I also highly recommend a reread or reading it through the audiobook because having Tom Hanks read it is a very different experience because I think you read it as he intended it, which is really interesting to hear because I reread a few stories with him just to hear how he told it or to like get a character's name pronounced correctly. And some of it I read, my version of it was read really differently.
Interesting.
Cool.
I'll give it a shot now that I finish it.
I mean, it's like 10 hours of just Tom in your ear. So just
ASMR, but
yeah.
Tom Hanks.
Just fall asleep to it.
Oh. Well, great. What do we got coming up the pike for these mini-sodes.
So the mini-sodes, we're about to change structure a little bit. We've done book club.
Long-form mini-sodes.
Yeah. Now we're going to go into, like, more specific mini-sodes. They're not going to be every other week anymore. Because we're going to let our episodes about the movies do the talking. And then from time to time, we're going to drop in, though, with a nice little mini... a meaty mini episode.
Yeah, let us know what you're hoping to see.
Yeah, we're thinking some stuff we are pondering and talking and researching is everything from Tom Hanks in television, Saturday Night Live hosting, things like Colin Hanks and sort of careers around Tom Hanks for Rita Wilson, anything related in that realm.
Yeah, it works for me.
And stuff like music videos, like Carly Rae Jepsen's I Really Like You. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff.
The man has really done it all.
Yes.
So thankfully we've got plenty of material to last us.
And then we have a big 10-hour special episode plan. We're just going to go picture by picture on his Instagram and describe it. You're not allowed to look at it. It's going to be... people are really excited.
Yeah, people are like requesting that, strangely. Yeah,
like minimum 10 hours. They want us to Twitch live stream it.
Yeah.
So we'll see what we can do.
Yeah. And we'll set up a Patreon for that.
Yes. We're going to need that. Or like a donation base while we do the live stream.
Well, I enjoyed reading this book with you, Daniel.
Thank you very much for buying it for me.
Oh, yes. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Wow. So long ago.
It was. All right. That sums it up for us. If you're interested in continuing the conversation or suggesting some mini-sode titles, segments to us, you can find us at talkintom.com. That's talking without the G. We're also literally everywhere else on the internet.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, SoundCloud, everything under Pod Hanks Tomcast.
Yeah, that's where we are.
All over the place. Well, Josie, thanks for going on this journey with me. I'm excited for what the future holds for these mini episodes and Talkin' Tom as a whole. I think this has been a really crazy 2 weeks of like moving forward.
Yeah.
And 2018 is only a few months in.
Yeah, baby. All right. And to you guys,
thanks for listening. For some reason, I thought you were going to sneeze for a second. Like, you guys. I was like, oh.